Discerning truth in a sea of lies. Live from Kalispell, Montana, it's Critical Disclosure Radio with your host, Jim White.
Okay, this is Critical Disclosure Radio. Thanks so much for joining me here today. I am your host, James White, and we are coming to you live from Kalispell, Montana. We are waiting for Stuart Rhodes to be joining us here any moment on the line through Zoom. Thanks so much for joining us here today on this, I believe it's the 12th day, it is, of January 2022. And we do appreciate you tuning in here. We're delighted to be on Mike Adams Natural News, actually the Brighteon Radio Network, Mike Adams of Natural News, who was actually my first guest on the show. And I think it went really, really well, and I really appreciated Mike coming on the broadcast. And he's a first-class guy, and again, delighted to be here on his show. So we are waiting once again for Stuart Rhodes, the founder of Oath Keepers, to come here. Here he is now, and we'll have him on the line here in just a moment. Army veteran, of course, as I stated, the founder of Oath Keepers, and he has been a guest on the broadcast several times before. And I have the names messed up here, so let me switch this around here to put his name under him and my name under me. And we'll be all squared away here in just a moment. Again, former Army veteran, Stuart Rhodes, founder of Oath Keepers, and been a guest many times. And what's probably little known is when I was doing Northwest Suburban News and I had just started, Stuart Rhodes approached me and asked me to go down to the Bundy Ranch, sort of as a media guy down there, and get the whole situation that went on there with Clive and Bundy and everything. So it was quite a trip, quite an experience. And I've always appreciated Stuart giving me sort of a chance or a break, I guess, if you will, to go down there. And here is the man himself, Stuart Rhodes, founder of Oath Keepers. Can you hear me, my friend?
Yeah, I can hear you, Jim. How are you doing?
Good, man. Thanks a lot. Appreciate you being here today with me on the broadcast. We're delighted to be here on Brighteon Network with Mike Adams Network here, and I appreciate you taking the opportunity to be one of my first guests here on the show. First, Stu, if we can, pardon me.
I've known Mike for a few years. Good man.
Yeah. He stated that he had interviewed you before. I don't know how many times you guys have interviewed, but I know he said that he's interviewed you before.
So
if you can, Stu, let's just start off just for some people that may be new to the Brighteon Network. I can't believe there's probably many people out there that haven't heard of Stuart Rhodes, but can you just give us a little bit of background? I talked about you being a veteran, starting Oath Keepers. Can you just give us a little very brief background, Stu, just on yourself before we sort of to set things up here as we go forward?
Yeah, so I worked for, I was a paratrooper in the Army. After I got out, I went to college, and then I worked for Ron Paul in his D.C. office. So I worked for Congressman Ron Paul from Texas. And that's where I'm at right now, as a matter of fact. I'm in Texas. So after I worked for Ron, I worked in both his presidential campaigns, and it was pretty obvious that once Ron Paul had the nomination stolen from him, that the Republican Party was a bit as much of a problem as the Democratic Party. So we had basically a uniparty. And so I decided to focus on the men with the guns, the men who'd be given the orders to violate people's rights. And that's when we started Oath Keepers, and I focused on military, police, but also other first responders, EMS, fire. And we see that now. We have a situation now because of all the COVID nonsense, where you've got unlawful orders being given to medical personnel as well. So I think I was pretty prescient in that. So we've been focused on that for over a decade now. And along the way, of course, we protected people against leftist violence in the street, especially since Trump's election. So starting in downtown Berkeley in 2017, we protected free speech events across the country, thousands of times, actually.
You know, I was going to bring that up here during the interview, Stuart. I'm glad you did. We can bring it up now. This, you know, we've talked about this pre-interview here. We've talked on the phone. We've been friends, I think, for several years now. I was just telling about how we went down to Bundy Ranch and that road trip and everything that happened down there.
2014, right?
Yeah, 2014. Matter of fact, I'm going to have Ammon Bundy on the broadcast tomorrow, and then James Wesley Rawls on Friday. So these are fellas that you know. You guys did it, the Oath Keepers. I do remember you going out and protecting people that were leaving the Trump rallies. I mean, they were getting the crap kicked out of them. Some of these people that were leaving the rallies heading back to their car. And I know you saw the call and the need and you stepped up, much like you did here in Kalispell, what people don't really know is when they were doing, we were worried, I believe, Stuart, and you can recap on this. I think we went to the recruiting centers because your people were going in. At some point, they were shooting recruiting people in recruiting centers. There was some wave of that.
There was an attack on a recruiting center in Tennessee.
Correct.
And that across the country, those keepers stepped up, and because you weren't allowed, the recruiters were not allowed to carry guns, which is ridiculous. So, you know, our volunteers stepped up across the country and stood outside the recruiting centers and protected them.
Stood in the gap, much like you did with the Trump rallies. You stood in the gap there and helped people out to the help them get out to the vehicles. That being said, you know, the January 6th thing, and we'll get to that in a minute. And of course, I know you've been subpoenaed, and we'll talk about that more. Are you troubled a little bit, Stuart, that with the work that you have done for the Trump campaign? I mean, it was visible. It's not, you weren't out there rabble rousing or causing. You were doing just the opposite. You were protecting Trump supporters, or maybe not supporters, but people that were at least leaving the rallies. Did you feel like there was a little bit of an abandonment with the whole January 6th thing? Because I know there's several Oath Keepers have been incarcerated, and we'll talk about that later. Did you feel a little bit like, hey, what happened to Trump, man? We were there when he needed us, but when we needed him, he's not there now.
Well, that's the thing is all of the people that are being unlawfully detained and denied bail, they're being abandoned by Trump. He's done nothing for them. He's, you know, he could donate money. He hasn't done that. He didn't pardon anybody while he was still in office. And then when he left, he hasn't raised money. He could hold a fundraiser. He could dedicate all the proceeds from one particular rally or one day to go to the January 6th defendants. And he hasn't done that either. So, yeah, I think he has abandoned his base. He's abandoned the people that were there to protect and protect his other supporters. So, yes, I do feel abandoned by him.
Well, you know,
he was supposed to hold a press conference on January 6th. Down in Mar-a-Lago, Florida. And if he had, our chapter from Florida was going to be outside with signs calling on him to support the detainees to come to their defense. You know, at least to help raise money. That's what he should do.
Well, I'm just going to get right to one of the points here I wanted to make, Stuart. And as I said, I've known you for 6 or 7 years now, and I think I had you on my broadcast about 6 months ago, and I asked you the same thing. But I'm just going to have you state it now here publicly once again for people that are tuning in new to this network. There's been some accusations. Of course, there was an article that came out that claims that you are a federal informant or you are somehow working for the feds, paid or unpaid. You're an inside guy, and you turned sides, and now you're trying to work with the feds to keep people behind bars or whatever other things they're talking about. Can you just state here directly on this broadcast? I'm just going to ask you, is any of that information true? Do you deny that, Stuart? And please expand on that as much as you feel you need to.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I mean, they tried to recruit Special Forces veteran Oath Keeper Jeremy Brown in October of last year, 2020. He had a couple agents try to recruit him, and he put that out. He put the video out of his interview with them, put the audio out. So they were trying to recruit him to spy on Oath Keepers back in October of 2020. If I'm a friggin' Fed, if the head of Oath Keepers was all along, that's what the allegation is, the head of Oath Keepers, I've always been a Fed, that Oath Keepers is some kind of a Fed operation. If that were true, then why are they running around recruiting people and paying people to come spy on us? Jeremy Brown was a stand-up guy and told him to go pound sand, but they still tried to recruit him. You know, in October of 2020, right before the election, why would they do that if they already had the top guy of Oath Keepers of the Fed? It's ridiculous. I have stuck my neck out and basically sacrificed myself, my own success, to do Oath Keepers. I was a Yale graduate, a Yale Law School graduate. I could be a wealthy lawyer if I'd have chosen that path. But instead, I chose to sacrifice that and do the Patriot cause. And so it's just absurd and disgusting to have people try to claim that I'm a Fed because I haven't been arrested yet. In the building, I didn't tell people to go, unlike Ray Epps, I didn't tell people to go in the building. All I was doing was there for security operations while we were there. And I was focused on trying to get my people back to where I was the whole friggin' day. And once we got them all together and back together, we left. So that's what happened that day. I wasn't encouraging anyone to go inside, and I certainly didn't go inside. But because these feds have a hard time, I've been a thorn in their side for over a decade. They'd love to put me behind bars. but I don't do illegal activities. I always stay on this side of the line. I know where the lines are, and it drives them crazy. So they're actively hunting me down. I've got the DOJ running around, sending the FBI out to investigate us, Oath Keepers, and they're questioning all of our members across the country, even guys that didn't go to D.C., about me and about their relationship with me. And the focus is on trying to build a case against myself and other Oath Keepers to bring us all into jail. But some people aren't satisfied unless we're all in jail. But even if we were all in jail, they'd still say we're feds, because there's a personal animus going on with Pete Santilli. That's where all this got started. And I know that's all his work. All the stuff that's in the Revolver piece that talks about Bundy Ranch is all Pete Santilli. So he went to Darren Beatty, and the two of them decided to make me the bad guy. And I think Darren Beatty probably got led down a primrose path by Pete Santilli, and now he just doesn't want to admit he's been snookered. So he's holding on to it, and yes, that must be true, even though all the evidence is exactly the opposite. So why am I being subpoenaed? Why would the January 6th committee subpoena me? And why would the FBI come and seize my phone if I'm already working for them? It's ridiculous.
Well, you know,
so I'm being harassed and hunted down. I've got three lawsuits now, one by members of Congress against Oath Keepers, along with President Trump and Proud Boys, by the D.C. Attorney General for D.C., and by some of the police officers from the D.C. Metro or the Capitol Police over there. They're suing Oath Keepers and Proud Boys and Trump, alleging we were all in this mass conspiracy. So why would they be doing that? Why would they be attacking one of their own if I was already a friggin' fed? It's ridiculous. I've been deplatformed and demonetized. I can't even get on Facebook or Twitter. That's not how it would go. If there was a front operation run by the feds, that would be on every news channel every night with a massive platform, lots of money, major traction. It would be deplatformed and demonetized across the country.
Well, you know, all I can do is speak from my own personal experience. And, you know, I don't know if I've reported this publicly before, but it's not like it's a big secret. I've known Stuart Rose, as I said, for a long time. He and I have went on several road trips together. I've went out with him as his camera guy, going with him to do, when he goes, has speaking engagements. And I've got a lot of the video that has done the Oath Keepers in a certain period of time was done by me. I can say here on this broadcast right now, never at any time that I've been involved with Stuart Rhodes have I known him to do anything that illegal. It looks like he's talking to any federal agents. And I've been on the road trips. We've been together for several days at a time. That's just not my experience. So I haven't really read all those hit pieces and everything.
Nor do I ever incite anybody or encourage anyone to do anything illegal.
You've never done that when I've been around. Nope. I can say that from personal firsthand experience. So,
That's what a provocateur does. A Fed provocateur would encourage people to do something illegal and get them to do it. And I don't. I never do. I never have and never will. And so that's exactly why I'm not locked up with all the rest of the guys, because I didn't go in the building. Unfortunately, some of our guys did. But they did it for what I believe are honorable reasons. They said they went in because they had heard someone had been shot. I didn't find out until after they had gone in.
So well, someone did get shot. Someone did get shot, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. Well, I know. But yeah. That's my point, is that they went in, one of our teams went in when they had heard someone had been shot. That turned out to be Ashley Babbitt. And I found out afterwards that that's why they went in. And I'm going to cooperate with their defense. I'll be testifying for the defense. Because that's what they were doing there. They were there for security, and the only reason they went in is because they heard someone had been shot, and so they had two medics with them. One was a trauma nurse, the other was an EMT, and so they decided to go in to render medical aid, and that's why they went in the building. And I think that's an excusable, honorable thing to do. Frankly.
So talk about honorable. I'm going to talk about dishonorable. You see the Gretchen Whitmer case, where I don't know how many of these people were federal informants. You see the January 6th case. You know, the 1990, people seem to forget the 1993 World Trade Center bombing. Apparently, that was done by the feds. They tried to set up Rashad Salaam for that, and he actually got wise to them and started recording all of their conversations, and they had he had a dossier, his lawyer. Matter of fact, you heard about Rashad Salaam until his lawyer came on and said, this is all the information we collected from monitoring the feds. You never heard about Rashad Salaam after that, because he had all the goods on the feds. They tried to train him. They cooked they built the bomb. They tried to have him set up. This is there's the most dangerous organization to proper law enforcement in this country is the Federal Bureau of Investigations. That's my viewpoint, Stuart. I've encouraged people here, the Montana legislators, numerous times to ask the feds to leave Montana before the FBI sets up some Montana man or woman for a crime, because that's what they do. That's what they do. Don't fight crime.
They've done it all across the country, and they've done that for generations. But going back to Martin Luther King and Black Panthers and the way they would try to set up anyone who's a dissident group or a thorn on their side or a thorn on the establishment side, the FBI will go after them, and they will do that. They will try to set people up. So I kind of get why people are so paranoid, and like everyone is so paranoid, because I know the track record of the FBI is pretty bad, and so they're always looking for the informants, and I understand that. But the thing is when you start doing circular firing squads and accusing everyone around you, to start accusing people of being a federal informant because you're suspicious, you wind up tearing each other apart. That's what's happened. That's one of the byproducts of putting so many informants out there and provocateurs that the FBI does do, is that causes people to not trust each other, and it causes suspicion and distrust. While they're also manipulating people and groups. So they are doing that. They are actively trying. We've discovered and kicked out multiple federal informants that have tried to worm their way into Oath Keepers. It's happened over the years. And we suspect that we know that in any given public meeting, there's going to be an informant there. It's just the way it is. That's true for any group out there. You can't count on having only sincere people around you. It's going to happen. They're going to send people in. But I think it's horrible to start throwing out accusations against other patriots just because this is what the FBI does. So they make you turn on each other and accuse each other and distrust each other. And that's not good either.
No, it's not good. And that's the way, of course, it's always the way that it happens, is it's by infiltration. And, you know, this nation certainly has been infiltrated, I believe. One of my biggest concerns, I'm shifting gears a little bit here, Stu. I know you have intel, and I know you still have connections with people that are military, probably many. What I'm understanding, and what my fear is somewhat, is that there's gonna be a land invasion by China. They're gonna wait till these vaccines. Of course, I had Mike on my show on Monday for this first show, and he thinks one of the possible scenarios is they could weaken everybody with this vaccine here, and then maybe do a land invasion. Is that something you're hearing? Do you think that's possible? Is that something that we need to be concerned with here in America? Is an invasion, a land invasion by foreign forces?
Yeah, I think absolutely it is. I think China, it's a no-brainer that they want this land. That's why they're buying up properties all over the United States. They're you know, sending all their graduate students here to come spy on us. And we've been doing that for decades. But I think China wants the land, and I think that this is, you know, it's part of a world war, and the American people, along with the rest of people of the world, are at war with these handful of powerful international elites. But they are aligned with China, and I think that's an unholy alliance between the communist Chinese and the globalists. In the end, though, I think the communist Chinese will stab the globalists in the back, and this will be a Chinese planet if they get their way. So I think that's absolutely correct. I think that's true. And I think Americans need to, you know, kind of like accept the reality that this is where we are, that they're using this vaccine to weaken people and depopulate the planet. And it's hitting our military hard, especially. We've got guys now who are getting out because they refuse to take it. That diminishes the military. I'd rather them get out than take it, of course. But it does diminish our military. Some of our better people are getting out now because they're too much common sense to become a guinea pig. And the ones that stay in, I think they're going to be seriously weakened and their capabilities reduced, absolutely.
So, you know, sometimes when the nation falls under tyranny, people start becoming active. They understand that they can't live under tyranny for very long. They start becoming educated and they start becoming active. Are you seeing that, you know, love Trump or hate him, or, you know, these things we mentioned earlier, notwithstanding, see that since he came into office, the general overall in America, generally, overall, people have sort of become more woke and more interested in what's going on, because he sort of put the lens somewhat. Go ahead. You think it's the opposite? Go ahead. Tell me.
Trump didn't do that. He rode a wave of populism and patriotism into the White House. We were there first. You can look back, like I said, at the Ron Paul campaign as the effort before that.
That's true. Ron Paul did start a lot of that. Yeah, that's true.
Well, but even Ron Paul didn't start it. You're missing the point. Those are reflections of the reality that a majority of Americans out there still love this country, still love the Constitution, and want this country to be preserved as a sovereign nation. And that's already there. Campaigns come and go. This is the problem with the Ron Paul movement. It was so focused on Ron Paul that when his campaign ended, they got dispirited, went back into the woodwork, and you're probably there too. They stopped taking part in the local politics. They were no longer in their central committees. We took over the Republican Party across the country, in counties across the country. I was in Clark County, Nevada for the 2008 campaign. We took over. We were destroying the McCain camp. At the Nevada convention, they broke the rules, violated their own rules, shut down the convention early to deny us the delegates to the national convention. So they stopped Ron Paul through violating their own rules. They did that across the country. But the point is that wave of patriotism is what Ron Paul rode into that campaign. And it should have stayed in place. It has to stay in place afterwards. You can't just focus on one guy. I don't care whether it's DeSantis or Flynn or Trump again. People have got to get rid of this celebrity worship where they focus on a man and instead focus on a cause. And a cause has to be there. You have to be committed to staying involved even when your candidate doesn't win. So this is the problem with focusing on a person.
So speaking of Ron Paul, I remember a graphic when he came in second one time in one of these Iowa caucuses or something. Ron Paul came in second. They literally removed his name from the CNBC, whatever it was. They actually took his name off and went from the first to the third and just omitted him like he wasn't even alive. They just took him right out of the line there. And I said, when I saw that, I said, the guy can't, he's not going to do it. He just can't do it. I love Ron Paul. I think he's great, but they're just not going to let him win. They're just not going to let him win.
Yeah. So what Trump was able to do, and to his credit, is he was able to play the game enough to get the nomination. And I'm sure the deal was, in fact, I heard it was, the deal was the same thing that Reagan was given. You must take our pick for VP. If you're going to get the nomination, you have to agree to Pence. That's what he did. So he had a snake in the grass right there in the nest from the beginning. Pence has always been a globalist. Anyone who's paying attention to his career knows it. And so, but you know, a lot of Trump supporters were blinded by Pence because he wrapped himself in the cross. Oh, I'm a Christian. No, he's a globalist piece of junk. And so they put him right there from the beginning, just like with Reagan. He was surrounded by globalists and neoconservatives who were there to control him. And that's what they did, to limit his activities, minimize any damage he might do to their agenda, and then run the clock out. That's what they did to Trump. Same thing they did to Reagan. So, you know, look, man, we overwhelmed the vote fraud in 2016. That's why Trump was elected. There was vote fraud. They tried to pad the vote, but they didn't do it enough. And so in 2020, they made sure they did it enough, and they used COVID to do it. That was the big cover for violating the Constitution, violating all the state laws, setting aside the normal way it was done. Let me ask you a question. How many of the congressional races in 2020 do you think were stolen? How many do you think were stolen?
Probably many. I think some of them votes came in days later. Well, that's when they did all the mail-in ballots, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
And all the other stuff they did, all the drop boxes, all the unsecured drop boxes.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Probably most all of them. Good.
It's a trick question. The answer is all of them. Because Article 1 of the Constitution, very similar to Article 2 when it comes to the electors for president, Article 1 says all the representatives will be elected in the manner established by the state legislature with input from Congress. Congress can make law about federal elections also. So, but the point is that in none of those states, when they modified their election law, they didn't do it through the state legislature. They did it through executive fiat, either county officials or state-level officials, setting aside the actual laws that govern congressional races, and they went ahead and just did whatever they wanted to do. That made it unconstitutional. Article 1 is pretty clear. It doesn't say they'll be selected in the manner established by the legislature of the states unless there's an epidemic of some kind. There's no escape clause from that. Same goes for Article 2 about the electors. The electors will be selected in a manner established by the state legislatures. That wasn't done across the country either. So none of those elections were legal. The presidential election wasn't legal, which means that Trump couldn't have won either. It wasn't a valid election. And none of the congressional elections that were in 2020, which is all of them, right, for the House, none of them were valid either. So the entire House is actually improperly seated and invalid at this time because none of those elections comply with the Constitution. And then they also violated federal law. So, and the only attorney that's filed any cases about this that has talked about this has been Kelly Sorrell out of Texas. And she has a case right now in front of the Supreme Court. I don't think it's going to go anywhere, but she's at least speaking truth about what really happened. The set aside of the normal rules in the name of COVID is itself a constitutional violation, makes the entire election illegal, unconstitutional. And of course, all those set asides were done to facilitate ballot stuffing and vote fraud, which they did. But there's two different layers there. You don't have to prove the vote fraud to show the election was invalid. All you got to show is what they plainly admitted. They set aside the normal laws. This is why it just drives me crazy to look at what's happening in this country, where you've got this mass media propaganda saying that this is the most secure, and officials saying this is the most secure election in U.S. history. It was the most unlawful and illegitimate election in U.S. history.
Yeah, officials.
Period.
Officials. Well,
it's important for us to realize that, though, because going forward, like I keep hearing about 2022, we're going to take back Congress, and then 2024 we'll take back the White House. And how are you going to do that when you've crossed the Rubicon, you no longer have a constitutional election system? We'll just pull COVID back out of their rear ends, and they'll use COVID as an excuse to do whatever they have to do to make sure that they retain power.
Well, the problem is we're in a state of lawlessness. There's no law enforcement. It seems like there's no organization. The organization that's supposed to really be the ones that are supposed to, enact the law enforcement techniques are the ones that are actually setting up setting up these programs and trying to frame people. So we're in a state. Talk a little, if you can, Stuart, about where we're at as a country. I mean, we're at a crossroads, I know, and we're going to have to do something. I don't know. I don't know what we're going to have to do because I don't know if voting is going to work or going to help, because you wonder, is there any confidence in that? I don't really have any confidence that if I go vote, it's going to count. Not at all. I just don't.
Well, I think all that being said, I think that at the very local level in your town and county, you should be involved in politics, and we should jump back in like we did before and take over the Republican Party from the inside out at the local level. But that's where you can fight for a clean election and put in good election officials, good judges. All that stuff matters at the local level. But beyond above your county and maybe some state, hardworking your state legislature, but above that, I think the federal elections are a lost cause. I really do. Because you're going to get the same crap again. It's going to happen again.
No, I agree.
But I do think politics matters at the very local level. And it's really an analogy to the founders' fight. They did the same thing. They were involved. They had foreign powers. In their day, it was the king, right? King and parliament, ruling over them through domestic puppets that they did not elect. It was the royal governors. And they had their mega corporation in their day, which was the East India Company. It had special favors from the king. We're dealing with a parallel situation. We've got foreign powers, the communist Chinese and the globalists, who rule over us through domestic puppets that we did not elect, like Biden. But not just Biden. The entire Congress. This is not saying that everybody in Congress is bad. Like, I think Louis Gohmert from Texas is a wonderful patriot. But the point is that in order to stop the Trump campaign and stop the populist wave, they shut down our election system and took it over. And they did that through COVID. And so you just have to be willing to accept the full extent of the damage. And the full extent of the damage is that entire election was unconstitutional.
Hold that thought. We got a hard network break coming up here in 20 seconds. Oathkeepers.org, oathkeepers.org, criticaldisclosure.com. I'm here with the host of, or the founder of Oathkeepers, Stuart Rhodes. When we get back on the other side of the break, we'll talk about the constitutional sheriffs, talk about Ray Epps and plenty of other things back after these brief messages here on BrightTianRadio.com. Okay, folks, if everything's working properly, we should be back after the break. I know we're working with the technicians over there and the Brighton Radio Network trying to get the timing and everything down, but we do appreciate you tuning in here today on Critical Disclosure Radio. Again, I'm your host, James White. This is the 12th day of January 2022, and I am here with the founder of Oath Keepers, Stuart Rhodes, who has been a guest on not this particular broadcast, but the many different radio shows I've done. He's been 20 times. He's been a guest on my show, maybe or more. Used to do video work for the Oath Keepers many years ago. You know, speaking of that, Stuart, let's just do a little look back here. What do you think here? What a time that 2014, that whole thing down there with the Bundy Ranch and everything that happened down there. You know, that was what you talked about before about that wave of patriots. That was sort of a spillover effect of those wave of patriots as well. When they saw, I think it was the video, was it Ammon that got pepper sprayed, or one of the Bundy boys got pepper sprayed or something. And that video went out, and man, I tell you, people just flocked down there. We're coming up here on the anniversary, I think, here, probably it would be the 8-year anniversary here in a couple of months. Any reflections back on that time? Anything you care to share with us?
Well, yeah, because what happened there is after the Waco massacre, there was a backlash. That's where a lot of the militias in the 80s came out, or the 90s, I mean, was after the Waco incident. And so the battle cry after Waco was no more free Wacos. That was one of the things that Mike Vanderbilt of the 3% movement would say. He was the founder of the 3% movement. He would say no more free Wacos. I think with Bundy Ranch, it changed into no more Wacos. We're not going to let you do it. It's not like you're going to do it and then we'll do something. It's we're going to stop you from doing it in the first place. that was the mindset of everyone that went down to Bundy Ranch. It was just, we're not going to let this happen. We could see the setup. It's going to be very similar to Waco, potential for, you know, loss of life of women and children in the Bundy family, very extensive family. And so I think that was the motivation of everyone that went there, was to prevent another Waco from happening in the first place. And I think we did it. So it was a mess, of course. You had a bunch of people coming in from all over the country, all kinds of groups, group leaders, a lot of them arguing and fighting, same kind of crap you're seeing now, all kinds of infighting. But point is that America showed up and prevented another Waco standoff from turning into a tragedy. And so I think we were successful in that. And I talked to guys that rode in, that they, you know, not even any group, they just got in a truck and came. And for the most of it was the image of the attack dog attacking a woman out there in the desert, and also this ridiculous little box that they put up with tape around it. This is your free speech zone on the highway in the middle of the desert, little tiny box. And we're like, wait a minute, this is not, you know, a lot of the guys who were recently returning Afghan and Iraq veterans were like, hey, this is not what I fought for. You can't just declare this is a little box you're going to be in for free speech. The entire country is a free speech zone. And so it pissed off a lot of veterans. Those are the two big things that pissed them off, is the ridiculous free speech zone attempt, and then also seeing the attack dogs. And also knowing that they had snipers, and they had a guy who used to be Special Forces that was a team leader for the BLM team. So he's a notorious contractor. So we looked at that and they're like, okay, they're going to militarize their response. It's building up to another Waco, and that's why people went to stop it.
So I think during that period of time, I think Sheriff Mack showed up there, and I think it may have been the first time I had ever met Sheriff Richard Mack. Went on to interview him several times. He's going to be on the show next week. Came here to Kalispell, spent some time here a couple of days. Did last summer. Great guy, like Richard Mack an awful lot. Constitutional Sheriff, Stuart, I know you're a proponent of the Constitutional Sheriff. How vital is that? We had an interview yesterday talking about, with Kurt McKenzie, talking about the Constitutional Sheriffs and how important that was. Montana is a sheriff first state, so it means the sheriff is the most powerful law enforcement officer in any county. Tell us, if you can, about the Constitutional Sheriff, and how are we doing as far as, I know you don't have your finger necessarily on that pulse every day, but how are we doing, generally speaking, as far as getting Constitutional Sheriffs in office? You think that's, we're moving forward with that positively, or does it need a lot of work still need to be done?
That's an example where local politics still matter. It matters who your sheriff is in your county. It matters who your judge is. It matters who your prosecutor is. All of that matters. Those are the most important offices. But of all of them, I would say sheriff is number one, because it only takes one election of one man to change the law enforcement culture in your county. Now, I'll say this. The office of the sheriff is nowhere mentioned in the Constitution, so I think it's a mistake to say that they're a constitutional sheriff, that they have some kind of special constitutional grant. That's not true. They have the same authority and the same duty as anyone who swears the oath. All the way from the president down to the local dog catcher, everyone swears an oath to support the Constitution of the United States. And if they're a state officer, you know, local, it's also to support the Constitution of the state that they live in. That's where their authority comes from. It's from their oath. It's not anything special or different than what I took when I was a paratrooper. What's different, though, is that because the sheriff is elected by the people, he is not answerable. He has no boss other than the people themselves. So it's more of a political question or a political issue that they are insulated from the anger of other politicians. A police chief, in sharp contrast, is appointed by the Board of Selectmen or for the county commissioners or the city council, and can be fired by them. So those are his bosses. That's why you see in a lot of these big cities, a lot of the police chiefs will go right along with violations of people's rights because they're afraid of being fired by the mayor or the town council. So that's the big difference, is that the sheriff is answerable only to the people. That's who votes him in. He can't be removed by anybody else. That's the big advantage. And because of that, now he can exercise his duty under his oath with a little bit more protection, because he's not vulnerable to being fired. That's the real difference. It's not that the sheriffs have some kind of special grant. This is where I'm going to probably piss off some people, but there's no special mention of, there's no mention of sheriffs at all in the U.S. Constitution. So a constitutional sheriff is the same as being a constitutional police officer or a constitutional soldier or sailor or marine or airman. you were just saying, I'm going to comply with the Constitution. I'm going to do the right thing. I think that's commendable and necessary. But it's not just on the sheriff to do that. It's on everybody to swear the oath.
No, that's what I'd always thought, that they didn't have any special powers. I thought that, you know, my interpretation of the term constitutional sheriff meant that they followed the Constitution. Pretty much is that's the way I'd always interpreted it.
They assume that there's some kind of special authority given to sheriffs by our Constitution. It's not there. It's the authority is, this is good news, is everyone who took that oath has the authority and the duty to say no to unconstitutional behavior by anybody else in the government. Now, should a sheriff stand up and say, I'm the top dog in my county? Yes, he should, because he is. And when the feds come in, it's not that the federal government can't do anything without the sheriff's permission. It's they can't do anything outside the Constitution. And so as long as they're doing something that is constitutional, the sheriff can't do anything about it, but he can stop what they're doing that's not constitutional. And so can anybody else who swore the oath. That's the whole point of that oath, is that everyone along the chain of command can say no. A lowly E1 can say no to the commander-in-chief if what he's telling him to do is unlawful. And he has a duty to say no. But that's true for everybody.
You know, speaking of that, you know, that brings to mind, and I know, you know, we can just, I'm going to talk about Ray Epps here in a second, but are you concerned, Stuart? It looks like to me that they're going to try actual, maybe door-to-door forced vaccinations on people. That is just an egregious violation of a person's rights. Can you discuss that just for a moment? Do you see them taking it that far? I mean, you know, of course they started out with the carrot, you get a free ice cream and you're all nice about it and it's come on out, it's all great. And then they ramp that up and they start tightening the grip more and more, and then you can't go in the store and then you can't fly. And then next thing you know, you're not going to be able to have your mail delivered, not going to be able to get gas. And then they're going to show up at your door. Hopefully they don't, but they're going to show up at your door with troops, with guns, and wanting to give you a vaccine. I mean, is that the natural progression that you see potentially going on here?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You can see it both around the world and also in some places like New York City, where it's an advanced stage of the cancer. You know, you got totalitarian cancer around the world. So, sure, because I think Cashman, Austin Fitz is correct. I think that this is a depopulation mechanism. Their goal is to depopulate the earth. So I think you're in a fight to death. And I think we need to realize that. So yes, I think that that's entirely possible, and that's what's on the horizon, unless the American people find a way. And this is why it's so important to have a good sheriff, and it's so important that he raise a posse, and it's important that you have, you know, patriots in your town councils and your county commissioners. It's critical. Because the resistance needs to be at the local level. It needs to be mass noncompliance and defiance. And then when they try to use force, that's where it's important to have a good sheriff. You need to have mutual aid, mutual defense. It's critical.
It's my understanding that the sheriff can, at any time, deputize everybody in the county if he wants to. Is that your understanding as well?
Definitely good. And also, sheriffs can have posses. Like Sheriff Arpaio is the flagship example of what every sheriff should do. Is he had a 3,000-man posse when he was sheriff of Maricopa County, Arizona. And that's what should be done across the country. Now, 500 of them were armed with AR-15s and pistols. The other 2,500 were not. But they did stuff like, they had guys who had their own planes or their own helicopters. They had search and rescue volunteers. They were doing a lot. Point is, though, it didn't cost the sheriff a dime. Didn't cost our pile anything. All the volunteers were self-supplied and self-funded. And he was able to do that. How come every other sheriff in the country doesn't do that? So this is the problem I have with a lot of these guys that proclaim themselves constitutional sheriffs, and they issue these proclamations of what they're going to do or not do, but none of them will do what Sheriff Arpaio did. None of them have a 3,000-man posse, and why not, or whatever size it would be for their county. So why not? So I think a lot of these sheriffs, it's a mistake for people to put all their hope in, oh, the sheriff's going to protect us. If the sheriff is not putting together a posse, which is basically a militia, of every able-bodied man in the county, then that sheriff is not doing all he can. He's not getting you ready. And so you need to push him to put a posse together. That's why I encourage people, even if the sheriff doesn't do that, you should go and start an organization or group in your county. Call it the whatever county you're in, call it the county volunteers. And you bring people together and organize and train them, and so that they're ready, like a turnkey posse in waiting is what needs to happen in every county. Don't wait for the sheriff to do it. Of course, go and encourage him to do it, but start building it even while you're talking to him about doing it. Try to get him to do it by creating it and say, there it is, Sheriff. It's already there. The veterans have led the way and are training everybody else to a good standard that you would accept as being a legitimate standard for your posse.
So I saw a video earlier where Ted Cruz was speaking, I believe, to someone high level up in the FBI, and he specifically asked about informants in the January 6th event, and they declined to answer. She also asked about Ray Epps, and she was evasive. I'm not sure if you saw that video clip. Give us, if you can, who is, in your view, Stuart, Ray Epps, and what is his role in the January 6th event? Do you have any insight on that? What's your thoughts? Did you run into the man? Do you know anything about him?
He was the Arizona chapter president for Oathkeepers many years ago, but he left. He said he had too much work in his family business and couldn't keep going. So I believe 2014 is when he left Oathkeepers. I'll go back and look, but I haven't talked to him since then. So since 2014, he left the org and went and did his own thing. So it's kind of weird that people say, well, you know, Oathkeepers, you know, Stuart Rhodes and Ray Epps are both in the same organization. It's like, no, he hasn't been there since 2014. He's been gone. He took off and did his own thing. So I didn't even know he was in D.C. We had no idea he was there. It wasn't with us. I didn't know he was there until I saw his photo later on the wanted list. And then later people showed video of him, you know, encouraged people to go inside. So that caught us off guard. But what I think about that?
Yeah, what do you think? Go ahead, tell me.
I don't know. It's a little suspicious. I mean, look, I'm not going to accuse him of being a Fed because I don't want to do the same thing that's been done to me. I'm not going to just throw out accusations without proof. But it is bizarre to have someone who is encouraging people to go inside not be a focal point. It just doesn't make any sense.
I saw one video where he actually whispered in some guy's ear, and like 2 seconds or 3 seconds later, like tears down the fence and starts like running through. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, if it looks like a duck walks like a duck, to me, it looks like he's sort of, you know.
Well, I mean, I asked my current chapter president for Arizona, and she knows Ray too, you know, what her thoughts were. And she says she just thinks he's a, She didn't think that was intentional. She didn't think that he's a Fed. She just believes that he thought that was somehow a good idea. So is he a Fed or is he just a dumbass? That's a good question. You know, so I don't know. That's the problem, right? Is his behavior is dumb. It's stupid to tell people to go inside the Capitol. It didn't help anybody. All it did is screw up the few congressmen who were going to stand up and challenge it. It screwed up their plans. It really did. So it was a stupid idea. Now, did he mean go inside and just do a sit-in? It might be what he meant. They kept on saying peacefully, you know. When you encourage people to go in the building, you're creating a situation where they're going to be absolutely vulnerable to what's happened. I mean, it was dumb to go inside. Anybody who went inside made a massive mistake, not because they were committing a crime. I'm not saying anybody did any crime. A lot of people just walked in doors already open, and that goes for the Oathkeepers as well. But it was stupid because it gave our enemies this great opportunity to use that as their Reichstag fire to say that, you know, we tried to overthrow the government. That was an example of an insurrection, which is complete nonsense. If we were trying to overthrow the government, we'd have brought guns. Anybody who was intent on actually taking over Congress would have wrote about firearms. So that wasn't the intent. I think a lot of people in their head, they were doing like a sit-in or they were going inside to voice their opinion and make a protest. And the left has done this across the country in many state capitals and also in Congress. They've gone through the halls and protested and jammed the halls with people and disrupted normal activities as part of their protest. So I think that was the mindset of a lot of people that went there that day. I don't think anybody went there with the intent of actually trying to kill anyone or take over the building because they didn't bring guns.
Dude, they had this guy. They had this guy. I saw the video. The guy that had the horns. I forget the guy's name that wore the hat with the horns.
The Q guy from Arizona.
Right. Okay. I don't remember his name now. At any rate, he's in one of the chambers with another guy, and the security guy or the police is there. I mean, they're armed. The police is there armed, and they're just kind of letting him do what he wants to do. I mean, they couldn't have just said, "Hey, you guys got to get out of here. They just kind of stood by and watched them. Hey, I think he wrote a note or something on Pelosi's desk and called her a name or something, some other drama. But hey, it's like, you can't just tell these guys to leave. Just ask them to leave, for crying out loud. You got a gun.
That's the thing is if you're going to accuse someone of trespass and arrest for trespass, you have to trespass them. You have to declare to them that, hey, you're trespassing. If you don't leave, you'll be subject to arrest. That's what you normally see, right? They declare this is an unlawful assembly. You must exit the area. If you don't exit the area now, you are subject to arrest. And then you're arrested for trespass. But you got to give them a warning. This is the problem, is there was zero warning. No cop on a bullhorn. No one saying, you know, you're trespassing, you must exit the building. Nothing. So you can't read their minds. They're just standing there looking at you, not doing anything. You walk in, you're at the back of a huge crowd, and you don't know how the doors got open. So you just see everyone walking in. The cops are standing there smiling. So you walk in too. How could you ever accuse that person of trespass? They didn't knowingly trespass. And that'd be like, that's like the most they did is trespass, if that. But even that's got a problem because they didn't give them any warning. So I think for the vast majority of people that went in there, they blundered into a trap. So, and I do think there's beyond a doubt that there were FBI agents all over that place and informants and provocateurs, along with Antifa, who were there to maximize the chaos, you know, to go ahead and tear down, like the guys you see in the videos, tearing down the fences and making it easier for the crowd to get through. I think that's beyond a doubt. So, but I don't know if we're ever going to find out who they are. You know, maybe it'll all come out in the wash later when these prosecutions going on. Maybe we'll find out who they were. But I think there's no doubt that happened, but I think that was a amplification. There were already pissed off Trump supporters there who were easy to lure into the building and easy to you know, magnify it.
So I think it's preposterous for these people that the most, as you stated, they may be involved in a trespassing offense, which I don't even think is a felony. Well, I guess there probably is felony trespassing maybe, but at any rate, they are been in jail now for some of them months and months and months on a trespassing charge, for crying out loud, man. I mean,
not jail. Yeah.
It's like lawlessness. It's like there's no law anymore. It's like the Bill of Rights and Declaration of Independence, Bill of Rights, Constitution. It means nothing to these. It just means nothing. It's a piece of paper. And I think we caught George Bush saying that on TV one time on an open mic, didn't we? The Constitution's nothing but a GD piece of paper. That's, I think, how they all feel. It's just an obstacle. It's just an obstacle that we have to just get around. That darn Constitution. It's a fly in the ointment. Any thoughts?
Well, yeah. I mean, what's happened is an absolute violation of the presumption of innocence. You know, it's supposed to be you're presumed innocent until proven guilty by a jury of your peers, and until then, you're innocent. So how does that square with denial of bail for 9 months? You know, like Kelly Meggs, the Oath Keeper team leader from Florida that led the guys in, he's been denied bail now. He's been there for 9 months. And so, and also Kenny Harrelson, another one, an Oath Keeper Army vet. Same thing, denied bail. And a bunch of other people were too. Like it's like, I think like 40 people now that have been held without bail for all these months. And the whole point of that is to coerce a confession, is to make them feel like they're not going to see daylight again unless they play ball and they go ahead and agree to pleading out and agreeing that they committed a crime they did not commit. So you got some guys who have done that now. And then they'll use them in the trials against the others, saying, well, see, this guy's going to testify that, you know, and you're going to testify, aren't you, that you were in this conspiracy? Because if you don't, it violates your terms of your plea agreement. So they coerce a confession, and they make them go and testify falsely against their fellows and go and bear false witness by yes, we all, you know, testifying that everyone was involved in a conspiracy. That's what they're trying to set up. So all of this is a way to coerce confessions. It's just like the Soviet Union. Coerce confessions and use those in a show trial.
Well, we don't have time to talk a whole lot about this because we're running out. We only got a couple of minutes left. But you remember Larry Wooten. You certainly remember the Wooten report, where he went out to actually investigate the Bundys to find out all the crimes they committed. And ended up finding out that the BLMs were really the crooks. And they actually ended up going to his house, I believe, and just raiding his house and totally trying to ruin the guy. He was like the chief investigator for the BLM. I think Larry Wooten was his name. There's a Wooten report out there. This is nothing that new, Stuart. I mean, these are, this is, they coerce people by force, and threats. And this is not justice. This is preposterous. There's only about 2 minutes left. I want to give you a chance to give out any websites or anywhere where people can find out more about you.
Yeah, oathkeepers.org. You can still, you have to mail us in a check to join Oathkeepers because we can't do online credit cards because we've been so deplatformed and our bank account shut down that you're going to have to mail a check in if you want to donate or join Oathkeepers. So, yeah, so that's where we're at. But we still take memberships, and guys can still join. We still welcome you. Just understand that, you know, we're being ripped apart just like any other patriot group, the thorn on their side, and do it from multiple angles attack. The false accusation that we're all white supremacists is complete garbage. The false accusation that we conspired to invade the Capitol is complete garbage. It's all complete nonsense. And the garbage that I'm a Fed is also part of the way you destroy someone's reputation or their ability to function. But they can't buy me, I'm not for sale. They can't intimidate me. They can't scare me into silencing myself or saying what they want me to say. The only way that they can stop me is to imprison me or kill me or destroy my good name. That's what's happening now. So I'm going to have a defamation suit against the Revolver and against Pete Santilli. I'm going to be suing them both.
We'll have to have you back to cover that more because we're just out of time. We appreciate you joining us here today. Stuart Rose, founder of the Oathkeepers, oathkeepers.org, oathkeepers.org. I'm your host, James White, Critical Disclosure Radio, criticaldisclosureradio.com. We appreciate you joining us here today on Bright Tee on Radio. We look forward to talking to you tomorrow. We'll have Ammon Bundy as the guest and James Wesley Rawls on Friday. I want to thank my guest, Stuart Rhodes, and thank you for tuning in. Until next time, this is James White for Critical Disclosure. Saying bye now.
All right, man.
We're so hot. I'm waiting for this video to start. So we'll see you, Stuart. Take care, man.
Bye-bye.